to Sageverse Shit Show. My name is Grant Bess.
Here with the Samuel Nathan Jackson on our, was it the 11th episode of the second 21st season?
21st episode of the first season. I don't know why this is a thing every week.
Year of our Lord, 2018. We apologize for the delay after last week's glorious solo episode. Hope you guys didn't get too bored by that, you know? Grant had his slam poetry night. I hope it was worth it, you know, to subject our listeners to that. But, you know, speaking of Chast Week, give us a Chast Week recap.
Oh, so last week was Chast Week. Focusing on it, we had Slam Poet with Lacey Rube. That's what happened last Tuesday when we usually record. She did great. Sam didn't have a chance to get down there.
Yeah, we had our training. Unfortunately.
But it was really cool. She is LGBT from Mississippi and lives in Austin, Texas now. She had an interesting perspective. She spoke a little bit about gun rights. She talked a little bit about LGBT rights. Fairly progressive, but at the same time, not like antagonistically. I don't know. Right. Slam poets can get real, real much.
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah. That was cool. Wednesday, we had our award ceremony, and then we had an amazing, amazing alumni event at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. Got to meet some really rad people. Met a woman who is working on domestic violence here, some high school teachers in the area. I met our donor, Mehdi Haravi, who is just such a cool guy. He was the former provost at the University of Iran. He's one of USU's biggest donors and Chast's largest donor. He sponsors seven scholarships every year, with different specific purposes on each one. He's also like one of the largest donors to American University in Washington, D.C.
Interesting.
And some others. He's really philanthropic. Some lawyers out of Salt Lake, some of which are still practicing law. I met one that was part of the Bush administration in Iraq. He was a liaison between the Iraqi government. So just some cool people. Anyways, really great event. Thursday, we had an awesome trivia night at the factory.
Who was our winner? Trivia night?
We had like seven. We had seven.
You didn't have
rounds.
A first place winner?
Not really. I mean, there's a first place team winner.
Everyone's
each
a winner, right?
Round.
That's what's wrong with our wrong with our society, Grant.
You are
if everyone a participation trophy, if there's like 20 teams and like a third of them get a
on
prize,
that note, my brother,
what the hell is the point?
On that note, my brother for Easter wanted all of the kids to get the same amount of eggs. And I was like, you're what's wrong with
the
this country.
The real deterioration of American society.
First off, let me be clear here. I don't even
Easter
like...
Easter should be competitive. It should be a cutthroat event.
That's not what it's about. I'm just saying, I don't even like the whole concept of the Easter bunny and the eggs and all this crap. I really don't like the whole... It's just stupid to me. To be fair, at least my brothers have... My mom, okay. My mom did like the very traditional, like, won't tell us that Santa Claus isn't real today. Like, she's like, you don't believe, you don't receive. She still attests that. Easter Bunny was like,
you don't believe.
She like was
receive.
The farthest side of this like mythology of like, you wake up, the eggs are hidden in the middle of the night. Easter Bunny's been there. I just think it's too much. My brothers go a little bit more like low key, like the kids see them like putting some of the eggs out.
Yeah.
We do like have the kids go inside so that we can actually hide some. But it's like in the middle of the day on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's just an activity. It's not.
Where are you on the tooth fairy?
I don't even like it. Yeah. I mean, I guess if your kid's like two or three, you want to mess with them for a few years. By the time they're like five, there's absolutely no reason that a kid going into middle school, like into school, period, should still believe in the tooth fairy or. Okay, I'm not even gonna say. I don't even like Santa Claus. Yeah, sorry.
You don't like Santa Claus?
I don't like the idea of lying to children and then expecting them to trust me later.
Have you ever seen the Polar Express?
Stop.
Do you hear the bell?
You're sounding like my mom right now.
You don't hear the bell, Grant.
Anyways,
Jesus, fell out of your pocket.
If you're gonna do this Easter egg hunt, like, yeah, let's do a little cutthroat. My family was always like the youngest got to go first. They got a little bit of time, and then the next one, and then like, I mean, there's a cutoff, right?
You could the way we did it at our house is you have three different levels of egg hiding spots, right? So if eggs are out completely in the open,
right,
they are the youngest children, of course. There are some that are somewhat difficult to find. In the, you know, 6 to 8 range, and then the oldest kids are the ones that are, like, tucked behind a branch.
See,
or
ours were, like, just a mix. Like, everyone can get everything, but like I said, there was, like, a time delay for the youngest children. Like, the youngest went first. But there was like, if the youngest could see the one that was like, and there was like differences, like everything on the lowest level, like kind of what you're saying, was candy. And then my mom would put like change, so there'd be like dimes and nickels. And
oh,
like,
that's lame.
Just like stuff like that.
What you can do with a dime or a nickel?
It was like, it was the sum. Like almost every egg had like these small amounts of change. So it's like the sum end of it. You'd have $5, $10. But then there would be like one egg with like $10 or $20 or something.
My dad put a $50 bill on an egg 1 year.
See, and that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. There'd be like one, and that one would be the one that's like freaking hidden.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my dad would kind of watch, and he knew where the high dollar ones were. So he'd be like, there's still one out there. There's still a couple out there.
Absolutely.
Anyways, whatever. You know what? I'm going to get married one day, and that person is going to have some influence on these traditions, and I'll probably just shut my mouth and let my kids believe in Santa.
That poor soul.
Here's my thing. The difference is when my kids ask me, I don't want to lie to them. If we just want to, like, roll with it and keep this whole, like, kids being obedient, not being crap bags, I can deal.
I'm not sure how we got into this conversation about believing in fictional or non-fictional
about
characters, depending on who you are.
My brother thinking kids should all get the same, a freaking participation trophy. Anyways, we're going to roll over to some other topics.
We're going to roll over.
We got a new basketball coach. We usually start with sports.
I talked about that last week.
A little bit last week.
But Grant, I mean, I gave my thoughts. What are your thoughts on Greg Smith?
I think it was sad to see Tim Duryea head out.
Duryea,
whatever. He's a good. I think he's a good guy, good coach. He's been here forever. I think Craig Smith's going to be awesome. He's super charismatic, Craig. I think he will be. He is the coach that the fans need. Now, he obviously has also coached a good team, so hopefully he's the coach that the players need. But Tim was definitely a very serious guy. I would love to see someone who actually. I want the next gif of the old man coach walk into a locker room to come out of Utah State.
Well, you know what I'm saying? We're now in rebuild mode. I mean, Kobe McEwen transferring schools.
That's been predicted for a while. Everyone knew that once Tim left that would probably be a thing. Whatever. Kobe's a good guy. Wish him the best wherever he goes. But you know what? We have other good players.
I mean,
we didn't lose Sam Merrill.
Pretty significantly, probably.
He is. No,
our best player.
By all means,
so.
I repped Kobe while he was here. I think he is one of our star players, but losing, you know, happened to the Jazz and they're doing fine. As long as we can recruit good.
If I hear one more word out of a Utah about the Jazz.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you not realize they moved up to the fourth spot?
Oh, the fourth spot. Wow.
In the West.
Who are they in line to play?
Next?
In the playoffs, do you know? Spurs?
Well, we haven't technically secured a spot.
Right.
The Spurs are fifth behind us.
Right.
They'll
get swept by the Spurs. And then Donovan Mitchell will go leave.
In the next, I think we play the Clippers on third tomorrow, and then on Tuesday we play the Warriors, and they'll destroy us, but a couple more games after that.
I don't understand. It's hard, like, especially in the West, you have to deal with the Rockets and the Warriors. Like, how it's hard to, like, get excited about that. I don't know.
Yeah, no, we're definitely way behind that. But if we can get, like, third or fourth in the – you know, lose to the Warriors in the semifinals or something.
You take some pride with that.
Okay, yeah. We could
be okay with that. It's all gravy.
It's all about, you know, you can be the best team in the league and that we still will, you know what I mean? Like, teams, upsets happen. That's all we need. It's just a solid upset. But
let's move along here.
What else we got on there, Mr. Samuel?
So we had an article sent to us by the one and only Spencer Perry. We appreciate people sending us things to talk about. This is probably, our second time
ever
happened to us.
So shoot us some
shout
stuff.
Out to Spencer.
We love it.
Spencer, you're the bomb. It's a Washington Post article about food security. It talked about a college student. I forget which school he went to. Basically, he was stretching a can of...
George Washington.
George Washington, right. To be fair, arguably the most expensive school in the country. It's up there. He was stretching a can of SpaghettiOs, you know, to last himself a day, a couple days.
Nice emotional pill to start an article off, for sure.
Good. It was a good hook. It was a good hook. And I think it kind of brings up the conversation of how big of an issue is food security on USU's campus. Obviously, Grant is an outgoing student body officer. I'm an incoming student body officer. This is something that's very important. It's not something that really gets talked about a lot.
Doesn't.
Basically, we have, you know, anytime food insecurity gets brought up, people just say, just go to snack, and, like, they'll take care of it.
But, I mean, to be fair, that's not a bad thing. So here's,
you know, you're right.
SNAC, the student, if you don't know what that means, that's the Student Nutrition Access Center. So we have one of the better food programs
in
universities.
Absolutely.
That same article that Spencer sent us says 30% of students at 66 surveyed college and universities do not get enough to eat. That's a pretty significant number, one-third of students. I don't think I would say ours is as high, but it's important to note, like Sam said, that our overall tuition cost is much lower, and the cost of living is lower. So I wouldn't say it's not an issue at Utah State by any standard, but I'll say that having lower costs other places definitely helps keep it not as much of an issue. Yeah. But yeah, the SNAC office has a ton of food. They've also just announced next year that they'll be even having some hot meals.
That's served, a really good thing.
Which is really cool because, you know, I don't know. I don't know if you've ever had to eat stuff out of a food pantry, but like
a lot of bread.
A lot of bread. A lot of dry pastas.
Yeah.
A lot of canned food.
Yeah.
Oatmeals. Just, you know, non-perishable food items. And you can only enjoy that so much. So it'd be cool to see some of that. If you are individually or you know someone who is, that's in TSE 333.
Absolutely.
It's kind of in the back corner, which is probably for the best. It's not meant to be something that causes anyone to feel
embarrassed or anything.
I don't know. Pride can kind of get in there. And so if you need it, don't be too prideful to come get some food. We definitely do our best. Stuff a bus in October, November is how we kind of contribute that to ourselves. So students go around, collect food from all over the county. We actually take it to the Logan Food Bank. And then throughout the year, Logan Food Bank kind of helps keep our shelves here stocked. So they're kind of linked in this co-relationship. We help them during the time of the year when they need food the most. And then throughout the year, extended.
Our dining services and food program is in pretty good shape here at USU. I mean, we just had had the head of the dining services department, Al Anderson, come talk to us yesterday.
Shout out to Al Anderson. Great guy.
He talked about their sustainability program. Basically, nothing goes to waste in dining services. Even the trim, you know, fats and little pieces of meat that they don't use, they bring those to Zootaw Willow Park and they feed them to the animals. So everything gets used. And I think it kind of quelled a lot of my concerns and a lot of things I hadn't really even thought about in terms of, you know, our food program and what we do with things we don't use because, you know, food is a big producer of waste. Mm-hmm. I mean, even at our house, like, we have to take out the trash, like, every day just because we just go through so much stuff.
Right.
So it's good to see that. If you're hungry and you don't have, you know, enough money to buy yourself a meal, you know, there's no shame going to the snack office, snack pantry. That's what it's there for.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So
yeah.
It does supply a little bit up for the weekends, but it's definitely there. The only thing they ask is you be considerate. You know, you take what you need. You just don't go too ham, but do what you need to do for sure. If you have any concerns or, I don't know, honestly, other ideas, like Sam mentioned, he is going to be your student advocate here in a week and a half. I'm sure he would love any input on how we can fix that.
Come through. Office TSC 340. It'd be a good time.
You know, Jenna Stoker, our new...
Come grab a Diet Coke.
Service vice president, helps oversee SNAC along with her directors. So...
yeah, please. Jenna's awesome. Reach out to Jenna.
There's different clubs that already collect breads and a lot of different things. But if you have anything to help with this idea, come at us.
Absolutely.
I feel like Utah State is at least positively minded that we're trying. There's probably still some gaps that we could fill, but this isn't something that we have to like necessarily prove on our campus. Like, I don't know. We also have good community resources, Loaves and Fishes. I think it's a Presbyterian church in town.
Yeah.
Have a good pantry.
If you have yet to volunteer at Loaves and Fishes, I highly recommend it.
I've never had a chance to be a part of that.
You shouldn't. It's a good opportunity.
A lot of the other churches in the area, the Catholic Food Services, LDS, Bishop Storehouse, a lot of the other churches in the area have different programs. I'll say this. If you are hungry in Logan, reach out. Talk to somebody. There is a way to make sure that your needs are met. And I feel confident in saying that. We have a great community here in Utah. But anyways.
Moving on. Got a few more things I want to talk about today. We want to move on to the YouTube shooter.
Yes. That was a little wild. I don't know if you guys got that, got
big
that
change
notification.
Of gears here.
Yeah. Anyways, her name is, oh my gosh, let me see it. Nasim Najafi Akadem. She's Iranian. So this isn't being considered a terrorist incident. Which I think is positive, right? Like, this is always the issue that when somebody white does it, they call it, like, a shooter, not...
A domestic dispute.
Domestic dispute, or... And to be fair, they kind of called that here. So that's what... This is a Middle Eastern woman, and they didn't try to put terrorist call on it. Pretty quickly, I think they discovered... So this woman had a YouTube channel. She actually is pretty popular. She actually had four different channels. She had three different language channels, one for English, one for Iranian, and one for Turkish. She's pretty confrontational in what she talks about. She also has another one on, like, art. But she's a strong vegan. A lot of her content is about animal rights. They haven't really released exactly why her accounts were getting shut down. She felt like she was being censored, that YouTube was trying to take away from her views. And so, anyway, she'd been reported missing. Her family reported her missing because they hadn't heard from her. They were worried because they knew she had a problem with YouTube and that she was maybe a little violent. They found her car. She was in it asleep. They talked to her. The police talked to her like 12 hours before this incident happened. And they were like, you know, she didn't seem like anything was happening. Like, she was asleep in her car. She didn't mention YouTube. She didn't mention being angry. She didn't mention anything. She was just like, oh, yeah, like, I haven't talked to my family in a while. And I'm just, yeah, like... whatever. So they just let her go. Like, there was no indicator. So this is one of those times where, like, you can't always prevent it, right? Like, anyways, this woman didn't have any criminal history. She was able to obtain a gun. There was really nothing that would have, on her record, from my understanding, that would have prevented her from getting it. She shot three people, then killed herself. She didn't kill anyone else. They were all wounded, luckily. But anyways, what makes this interesting is she's arguably left. I'm going to say that on the animal rights side, she's left-leaning. I don't know about her other views. Maybe she's a little extreme in religion or something else. But she felt like she was being censored. You have the same thing right now. So, like, Utah Gun Exchange, which is a large website based out of Utah, but they actually serve a pretty large mountain region. They were started after KSL, a news channel local, you are familiar with it, closed down their ability to sell firearms on their website. KSL is owned by the LDS Church. They were just like, you know what? We're a news station that's owned by the LDS Church. Like, by a church, period, there's no reason we should have guns being sold on our website. So they shut that down, and almost immediately this other website, Utah Gun Exchange, opened up and pretty much filled that need here locally. But now they are starting a video hosting channel for the same thing. YouTube is cracking down hard. Any element of violence is getting shut down. So this woman who encouraged violence for pro-vegan, pro-animal rights situations, pro-PETA, she was shut down for that call for violence. Anyone that has even just like a gun instructional video can get taken off YouTube right now. It's kind of causing a controversy on the right. But you know what? YouTube's a private company held by Google, or Alphabet more properly. This isn't surprising. Google's a little bit left-leaning, and in their own preservation of their self-assets, they're just pulling themselves out of anything that... It's never good when you find out that one of these shooters has been on YouTube talking about violence or ISIS for 2 years. And Google used to be very big on this pro-free speech, not censoring anything unless it broke copyright law. They're kind of changing that policy. Curating a little bit more. It does call into question, what do you think, Sam? I've been talking here for a minute. How do you think about YouTube's decision?
Well, I think it kind of brings up a... I mean, I, at the end of the day, they're a private company.
Right.
Right? And so I think them banning these types of videos, if it's good for business, then it's good for business.
Damn good Republican you are.
And it's not like... And I...
It's good for business. Good for business.
But I'm just saying that's what makes
sense. Sell them bump stocks. Good for business.
I'm saying that it's what makes sense to them. Right. So if it makes sense for them to ban, you know, this woman's videos, they're a private company.
They have the right to do it.
If it's not against the law for them to do it, then they go ahead and do it. I mean, if a, you know, a social media platform like YouTube or Facebook, what?
Yeah, I want to see what's on there. So.
If a social media platform like YouTube or Facebook, you know, wants to have completely open and free speech and just have no regulations on anything that anybody posts, then that is their choice as well. But, you know, Facebook, especially Mark Zuckerberg, has come under a lot of pressure recently for some things that have been going on with Russia, kind of stuff. That's an art topic for another day. But I don't think it's impossible for YouTube to predict something like this happening as a result of somebody's video getting banned. Mm-hmm. So, and if you're one of those people who, you know, wants YouTube to let anybody post anything they want, then like, where do we draw the line, right? Should they be allowed to put porn on YouTube? Should they be allowed to put, you know,
right,
beheadings on
YouTube?
Already,
they're already curating it to some degree. It's right. Just they're moving that needle a little
exactly.
bit farther.
So, and feel free to move that line in any which way you please, if that's the way you want to be. But I think they have the right to remove any videos they want to remove, and that's kind of where I stand on it, I guess.
Interesting. Well, keeping on maybe the free speech, civil rights mentality, today marks 50 years from the assassination of Martin Luther King. MLK is a huge inspiration to me. Somebody I, you know, in like seventh grade, we did this massive service learning project where we painted all these paintings and paid for busts and stuff. And anyway, since then, I've been a huge fan, right? I'm a history major.
Throwback to our MLK Day episode.
Hashtag go MLK. Not a Malcolm X fan. That's my opinion.
X is up, baby.
Anyways, sorry. When anyone is quoted saying bullets are more effective than ballots, I lose my respect for them. So we are definitely
not
going to
get into that right now.
So this is the 50th year anniversary of him. But besides that, we've also lost two women who had a great influence on civil rights recently. Winnie Mandela, very big activist, passed away last week, as well as, let me see here, find her name here. Ooh, can't find it. Tamiko Brown, Najin. She is remembered for the 1954 case, Brown versus the Board of Education. Basically, getting rid of segregation in schools. So we've lost some really big civil rights leaders this last couple of weeks, but then of course today marks the actual death of Martin Luther King. USU did a really cool pilgrimage, or it's still kind of ongoing, but it took students to see the sites associated with this. I just wanted to, you know, throw a little shout out here. There's a lot of tributes throughout the United States for this Assassination Day. I would arguably say Martin Luther King is the most influential individual in the civil rights movement. He's definitely made a hero, and what I mean by that is there's hundreds of people who did amazing things, and it's not just the Rosa Parks. There was other people who literally did exactly what Rosa Parks did before she did it.
Yeah.
Other black women, like literally, like spot for spot, the exact same thing she had done before. But, you know, we need heroes to get behind in movements like this. And she's one of them. She'll get remembered. Martin Luther King will get remembered. Brown will be forever remembered.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that today is the 50th anniversary, and I think kind of puts everything into perspective like this. Kind of, a lot of times it feels like this is ancient history, right? MLK was assassinated forever ago.
50 years ago.
Right, 50 years ago. But, you know, a lot of people who were there at that time, who were in their 20s, who were supporting civil rights, who were against civil rights, a lot of those people are still living today in the United States.
They are.
So It's important to keep that into perspective. Those people's kids are still living in the United States. And so we're still fighting a lot of the same battles that Martin Luther King was.
Right.
And I think that's why it's important to celebrate his legacy today. So I take a second sometime this week, if you have time, watch some of his speeches, not just the I Have a Dream speech.
So there's better ones, to be honest.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff out there. And just educate yourself about, not to sound preachy, but just read as much as you can about him. Read as much as you can about the time period, because it puts a lot of things into perspective about how far we've come and about how far we had to go. So also shout out to my girl Hannah Bundy in Montgomery, Alabama, as we speak.
Yes,
so
she is part of that civil rights pilgrimage.
Yes, shout out.
We spoke about. Moving on to a couple of the things, Donald Trump has said this week that we will be pulling out of Syria soon because he doesn't feel it's in the best security interest of the United States. This is kind of interesting, right? This is the same guy who is promising to, you know, destroy ISIS with his own fist.
Bring down fire and fury on
obviously Obama got us into Syria not that long ago, within the last couple years. You know, ISIS's territorial holds in Syria are gone.
Yeah.
Is my understanding. And so he's pulling out. This is huge. I'm not going to give Trump all the credit by any means, but what people need to understand is that two things. One, the pulling out of Syria, the U.S. didn't have to go in the first place, honestly. Obama didn't have to put us in there. They had Russian support with Assad. It probably would have happened. We wanted a little bit of control of what happened on the ground, so we did. To be honest, terrorism is still probably going to thrive in Syria. We didn't solve it. But this is an example of what post-9/11 mentality has to be right now. We can't stay there forever. We're still in Afghanistan 17 years later. You know, we were in Iraq for whatever, some 8-9 years. Even longer than that, like 11. But the point is, Syria could become the exact same thing. We took out ISIS. They made a decision. I read an article today. I think it's a really interesting thing to think about if you're talking about Syria. So ISIS made the decision to try to hold ground, which made them be defensive. This is the same thing that happened with the Taliban, right? ISIS, instead of being a really effective international terrorist, which as bad as that sounds saying, they made a decision to try to protect a specific piece of geography. What that made was, it almost made it easier for us and Assad and Russia to come at them. Because at that point, they can't focus their efforts abroad. They have to defend the ground they're on right now. They will continue to be around. They'll turn into another Al-Qaeda and just launch attacks from different cities and, you know, sleeper cells around the world. But I think Trump's making the right choice here. That hasn't been said very many times in his presidency. But
again, not to give him too much credit, you know, he has not set an official date on when we're pulling troops out. So it's kind of open-ended. You know, I'm reading an article right now. Joseph Votel leads U.S. forces in the Middle East, told a Washington audience at the U.S. Institute of Peace on Tuesday that, quote, a lot of very good military progress has been made against ISIS over the last couple of years. But the hard part, I think, is still in front of us. We still have to address long-term issues of reconstruction. Brett McGurk, in charge of U.S.-led anti-ISIS diplomatic effort, made a similar case. We are in Syria to fight ISIS. That is our mission. That mission isn't over. We're going to complete that mission. So it's not like, I don't know.
It depends. You're right.
So Trump saying, I mean, first of all, he's a pathological liar. So there's that. Grant just rolls his eyes.
I don't think this decision was made by him. I'll say that. I don't think he'd made it.
That's good conjecture. But again, we'll see if he puts his money where his mouth is. I mean, I'm obviously in favor of pulling our troops, put them back home. So
it's kind of interesting. You've got two different examples, right? You've got an example of Bush in 2003. We had that victory day. You've probably seen the picture. It's in Iraq, and they've holding up this banner. It's like we've only been there for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We say like victory in Iraq. Like we came in, we bombed the crap out of it, took everything out, took the statues down. Like very quickly, we put up a big victory banner and then stayed there for another 10 years, right?
Yeah.
So there's that mentality, which is what some people are advocating for, right? And then you have the end of Iraq, which is Obama pulling us out in 2012, December. However, as positive as that can be looked at, ISIS starts to form in Iraq less than 6 months later. And now we had to fight, come back and fight ISIS, right? So it's like pulling out really quickly could be our best effort here. I don't think it's a bad idea. However, we just need to know that, like, we can't really predict what's the future. We might, we've been in the Gulf multiple times the last 30 years. It could just be right back here in 5 years under a different president. And they'll blame Trump for pulling out too soon. And right now, those same people are celebrating the possibility of troops coming home. So who's to say? We've kind of come to this dilemma in our military policy with Republicans and Democrats alike, that we try to be everyone's policeman, costs us a lot of money,
a lot of lives,
but it also sets us up for failure if we leave, or, like, you know what I mean, there's no real win. We either stay there and waste our money, or we leave and then a terrorist group pops up and we get blamed for it. So moving on, Utah politics. We're getting to the point. April 1st was one of those dates where a lot of the laws go into play. June 1st is another one. Some of them are at the end of the year. Most notably, the blood alcohol content law goes in the end of this year. But a lot of the other ones are starting to come into play. Herbert has either signed or passed almost everything this summer. Any of the bills he's vetoed will go up. He has made vocal opposition to the voter initiative for marijuana. Boo. Move over. We're done with
the champion of progressive politics in Utah. Gary Herbert. Gary Herbert in the legislature.
Freaking A. So Gary Herbert, much like people thought, all right? I was talking to my brother about this last weekend. We've got two really strong examples of this happening right now, where the legislature passed watered-down legislation to undermine voter initiatives, right?
Yeah.
One of which was a compromise bill for our schools now, which brought 10 cents gasoline tax in order to weaken their case. And then the other one is this one, where they passed a couple different marijuana bills that allows people who are dying to try marijuana and the state of Utah to grow that marijuana. They legalized CBD oil, which was already being sold in Utah, but kind of illegally, which was one of those weird situations, but they formally legalized it. Of course, all of these are still illegal under federal law. Of course, you guys have heard this conversation. It's a mess. But boo Gary Herbert for making public opposition. You guys know this is one of my strong points, but
Grant loves his weed.
I don't ever, but yes.
Grant Stoner Bess.
Moving forward, we've got just a couple more things. Stick with us. LDS conference happened a couple weeks ago. It was a little interesting. The Statesman reported on this. Someone came and commented, like, why is the school newspaper reporting on the LDS church's private meeting? And this kid, I'm not going to call him out by name, he's a returned missionary for the church. He's trying to be progressive and speak for all people. Here's the reality. We live in Utah. Things that happen when the leaders...
It's our way or the highway. That's what Grant's trying to say.
No. What I'm saying is that the LDS church has a lot of political power and pseudo-political power within their membership, right? When the most important people in that organization get together to make announcements, like, yeah, low-key, it's kind of news. That doesn't mean...
Yeah, low-key, it's kind of news.
Like, I'm just saying, like, it doesn't matter if you agree or disagree. And that's what I expressed in my comment back was, even if you were in opposition of the LDS church...
Right.
What happened at conference is still news to you. Like, what was said and what wasn't said is just as important to both sides of this party, or of this dilemma, right? Regardless, notably, they're ending their program called home teaching as well as visiting
Grant
teaching.
Grant has already been ministering.
They're replacing it with
reports,
a very similar. They're replacing it with a very similar program. There's not all the details have not been threshed out there yet. This is kind of a running joke in Mormon communities because people are really bad at this. It's just a way for members to get to know each other and help each other. We'll see what actually happens. Additionally, I'm trying to think of some of the other bigger things. The one that everyone talks about. Oh, yeah. So leadership within the church and the priesthood will change a little bit. Yeah, I don't know that there's much to talk about. It is news for members, but... It'll just basically affect how weekly services and a couple of the organizations exist. And then I don't think it wasn't even formally an announcement, but it was definitely what took over Mormon Twitter and opposition Twitter.
Mormon Twitter is a scary place, folks. It's a scary place.
Hashtag LDS stake, or Twitter stake, I guess, is the hashtag Twitter stake. That's what everyone calls the like Mormon feminism. I don't know. There's a lot of different ones. Point is, here's what I'm saying. The most important thing that was being talked about was two apostles, two men were made apostles, one from Brazil and one from California. Yeah. However, they're both have large foreign experience. Elder Wong is from, grew up in California, Elder but he
Gong,
speaks.
Right?
Yeah, Gong. Yeah. Ugh, my bad.
Damn. That was bad.
Elder Gong is from California. He speaks Cantonese or Mandarin. Speaks some sort of Chinese.
Hashtag
he has a lot
Dinwage
of experience
conference.
In Asia, both politically and within the church. And, you know, he's just, he's got some cool stuff there. So he has a lot of experience for that geographic part of the world. Elder Suarez is from Brazil and speaks Portuguese. It's just, the LDS Church is becoming more of a global entity. People are looking at it as a positive thing. We have more foreign-born people, more foreign language speaking.
It's the fastest-growing church in the world, right?
Is it?
That's not true.
Is considered the largest-growing religion.
They tout it all the time.
Anyways, those are some big things. Notably, women were still not given the priesthood. People are freaking out about that. I don't think anyone expected it to happen. I don't know why. There's a lot of rumor going on Twitter, people thinking that they were going to shorten church service times on Sundays.
I'd be in favor of
like
that.
It was just a fun little
90
rumor.
90 minutes or nothing.
Rumor
90 minutes
fest.
Or nothing.
They
Grant,
announced.
Hot take. Hot take right now. I need a hot take.
What?
Do you think the church will give women the priesthood in the next 10 years?
No. Absolutely not.
Okay.
30 years? No.
On the record.
45 years? No, I don't.
On the interesting. Okay.
It's doctrinally based. People always like to make the blacks and the priesthood argument, which, to be honest, is one of my strong issues. I don't like to talk about it. I don't understand it fully. There's a lot of issues there. That was way less doctrinally based. There's way more evidence on this one. We're not going to have this religious discussion on the mic. I can already see Sam's face. Here's the point. I don't see that happening anytime soon. I really don't. Do I see other changes? Sure. Like the sexual assault stuff from this MTC president, guarantee you're going to have more. They already announced a small policy change. Minors can have an adult in the room, either a leader of their choice or their parents. I think you'll see more stuff like that change. A lot of the stuff that changes in the church is not doctrine, right? It's like policy. So like, could it go to 2 hours, 90 minutes or less? Yeah. There's
90
churches,
minutes or nothing. I've been saying this.
There's churches all over the world.
I've been saying this since I was six.
Even the Mormon church has tested the 2 hour thing. Like there's no doctrine that like has set it up this way. It's changed in my parents' lifetime. I've been to military churches that last 15 minutes. Same LDS service. It's just, you do what you can with the space, time, constraints you have. They announced a new temple, making the 19th temple in Utah. Notably, they announced one in India.
High demand.
That was pretty big news. They also announced one in Russia.
Announced one in Richmond, Virginia. Shout out, DMV.
Yeah, so Richmond, I mean, it's the first one in Virginia. That's a pretty big deal. Another one in Utah, kind of a big deal. The India one was a pretty big deal just because of where it's at in the world. Russia was a big deal just because of how Christianity as a whole has been has been discussed in a post-communist Russia.
I can't believe Putin a temple in Russia.
So stupid.
What?
Anyways, there's some Mormon news for you. We don't have too much else today to talk about. I think the only thing I would consider is there are still a few applications open on the USUSA.usu.edu website, including Government Relations Council. Some of them are closing, though. CHASS Council has already closed.
Yeah, a lot of them closed last night. But GRC applications will be open until next Friday, the 13th.
If you're not involved, get involved. Share this with your friends. Sam is still looking for someone to join him on this podcast.
Really, no one has approached Grant or I about taking his place next year while he is abroad.
Like, we will take your message as not completely hateful and not approaching us, but we definitely would love to continue this going.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, if we have enough interest, we'll have interviews. It'll be a whole thing. Another thing to apply for. Count as involvement.
Anyways, as always, you can find us anywhere you listen to your podcast. Please share us with your friends. You can find us on Twitter at Sagebrush Show. You can find myself at ZGrantBess on Twitter. Sam here at Sam N. Jackson.
Correct.
Pass us on. Let us know. We're just here for the people, you know? Anyways, love you all. Just bye. Here for the people.